Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Freaky as Fuck podcast. I'm your host, Sarai, and I hope you're all doing wonderful and fabulous. I hope this Mercury and retrograde is treating you well. Today, I wanted to cover a case that many have most likely heard of due to a certain 2006 movie that I will not mention by name because of the controversy surrounding it. But if you're really interested, I'm sure a quick Google search would answer any questions you may have regarding that. Anyways, this episode is not about that. This episode is about the true life events that took place that inspired that movie, and that is the murder of Nicholas Markowitz. On August 12, 2000, at around 1 p.m., three hikers at the Los Padres National Forest near Santa Barbara, California, noticed a strong odor coming from somewhere off of the path. They followed the smell to what looked like freshly disturbed dirt and immediately called authorities. They had stumbled upon the body of missing 15-year-old Nicholas Markowitz. Nicholas was the son of Susan and Jeff Markowitz of West Hills, Los Angeles. When asked to describe Nick to someone who had never met him, his mother Susan described him as
the funniest person on earth. He just had so much energy. I don't know what was going on in his head, but he would do anything to make us laugh.
His older half-brother, Ben, however, was described as not necessarily a troublemaker, but he was always there when there was trouble. Ben is Jeff's son from a previous marriage, and the family desperately tried to keep him from getting into trouble. However, after they'd been unable to keep him in line, Jeff and Susan presented Ben with an ultimatum. Get your shit together, or get out. A decision that Jeff would later regret making.
If I would have held on to Ben and kept him in my household, he wouldn't have been on the street. He wouldn't have been involved in maybe some of the other things that he got involved in. He probably wouldn't have met Jesse James Hollywood.
Jesse lived just a few blocks from the Markowitz's home. Jesse's dad, Jack Hollywood, had even coached the boys' Little League baseball team when they were younger. After graduating, Jesse decided not to take the college route, unlike many of his classmates. But he somehow became extremely successful. Jesse had decided to go into business for himself, and by 19 years old, he purchased his first home and was able to provide a large cash down payment with the money he had made selling marijuana. Jesse had recruited friends of his to sell drugs for him, and Ben was one of those people.
Ben was dangerous to Jesse James Hollywood. None of the other kids would stand up to him. None of them wanted to fall out of Jesse James Hollywood's favor. Ben Markowitz, he didn't care. And he was probably the only member that didn't kowtow to Jesse James Hollywood. Jesse James Hollywood would tell him, you owe me money. Ben Markowitz say, screw you.
The relationship between Ben Markowitz and Jesse Hollywood was later described as being complex. They had grown to be close friends at one point, but Ben had later decided to clean up his act. He'd gotten himself a legitimate job and had even gotten engaged, but this didn't erase the $1,200 debt he owed to Jesse. There was also some bad blood between the two after Ben had outed Jesse to the authorities about a $36,000 insurance scheme he was running. In retaliation, Jesse had gone to the restaurant that Ben's girlfriend had been waitressing at and stiffed her on the bill. Ben, obviously very pissed off, decided that he was going to smash Jesse's windows. And I guess this is the point where Jesse decided that he had had enough. And on the early afternoon of August 6, 2000, Jesse Hollywood and a couple members of his crew piled up in a white van and drove to West Hills to hunt down Ben. The following evening, Nick had gotten into an argument with his parents and had ran out of the house. He had returned home at around midnight when his parents told him that they'd all have a long discussion in the morning. However, when Susan went up to his room at 11 a.m., she'd find his bed to be empty. Just before 1 p.m. that same day, Pauline Ann Mahoney was driving home from church when she spotted a group of young men beating on another boy who was cowering on the sidewalk. She would later testify that
they were beating him up pretty badly. The lot of them threw him into the van, and then they jumped in, shut the door, and the van started moving.
She had been witness to the abduction of 15-year-old Nicholas Markiewicz by 20-year-old Jesse James Hollywood, 20-year-old William Skidmore, and 20-year-old Jesse Ruge. Once in the van, Nick was instructed to empty his pockets of his wallet and pager, which had been beeping nonstop as his mother was trying to get a hold of him. Nick knew that if Susan called his pager, he'd better return the call. So when he didn't get a hold of her after several attempts, she knew that something was amiss. Nick had been told that he was being held hostage until Ben paid his $1,200 debt. The van was headed north on the 101 towards Santa Barbara, which was 70 miles away from West Hill. Nick was being brought to a house where a party was being held. He was brought into a bedroom and then was blindfolded, gagged, and bound by duct tape. It was reported that several individuals had sneaked a peek into the room and saw Nick being held captive, but no one decided to call the police after Hollywood ordered everyone to
keep your fucking mouth shut.
Nick was provided with Valium and marijuana to help calm his nerves, and it seems that after some time of being bound, he was let loose by his captors to freely roam around the party. Over the next 24 hours, Nick and his captors moved around Santa Barbara from one hangout spot to another. Jesse Hollywood, on the other hand, fled Santa Barbara for San Fernando Valley after the first night of Nick's capture to meet with attorney Stephen Hogg, who was a friend of the family. Jesse had provided Hogg with minor details of the situation, stating that he knew of some guys who had kidnapped someone and were holding them for ransom, and he had asked how severe the repercussions could be if they were to get caught. Hogg had told him that the maximum penalty for kidnapping with extortion in California was a life sentence, which caused Jesse to become extremely nervous. It's reported that he had become so agitated by what he'd just been told that he stormed out of the attorney's office. I don't know, maybe he shouldn't have fucking kidnapped someone. Like I had mentioned, Nick was being brought around from spot to spot in Santa Barbara. At one point, he'd been brought to the home of a 17-year-old girl who was friends with some of Jesse's crew members, such as 17-year-old Graham Presley. The girl had become worried for Nick and started discussing plans for a possible escape for him, but Nick had explained to her that, quote, "Don't worry, you know, everything's gonna work out." Later on, this girl would ask Graham Presley if they were going to kill Nick. "Of course not," he'd said. However, he did explain that the idea had been previously discussed. Hollywood had apparently offered one of the captors, Jesse Ruge, money to take care of Nick, but he refused. Ruge had apparently later told Nick,
"I'm gonna take you home. I'll put you on a Greyhound. I'm gonna get you home."
On the second day of his capture, Nick was brought to the Lemon Tree Inn Motel, where a pool party was being held. Nick was seen having a good time, swimming in the pool, talking with girls. According to a young woman who had had a conversation with Nick that night,
"He seemed happy. I had talked to him about it, and he said that he would tell his grandkids about it someday."
When another girl had asked him why he simply didn't just get up and leave, he'd responded with, "I don't see a reason to. I'm going home. Why would I complicate it?" On that final day, Jesse Hollywood had met with 21-year-old Brian Hoyt, who was in debt to Jesse. He handed him a duffel bag that had a Tech 9 in it. He said,
"We got a little situation. You're going to take care of it for me, and that's how you're going to clear your debt."
Over at the motel, everything had winded down. The pool closed, everyone had gone home, and Nick was sat in one of the rooms with Jesse Ruge and Graham Presley when Brian Hoyt arrived. Nick Markiewicz was given Valium and marijuana to sedate him, and was led to a red Ford Escort, which they drove to Los Padres National Forest. Graham Presley had been brought to the area earlier that day to dig a hole. He waited in the car while Ruge and Hoyt dragged Nick up the trail to a campsite called Lizard's Mouth. Nick's mouth was covered with duct tape, and his hands were bound behind his back. He was hit in the back of the head with a shovel and then shot 9 times in the abdomen and chest with the semi-automatic pistol before the gun jammed. Ruge and Hoyt then dumped Nick's body in the shallow grave, tucking the gun under his knees before throwing dirt and leaves on top of him. While all of this was taking place, Jesse Hollywood was at an Outback steakhouse in Los Angeles, celebrating his girlfriend's birthday. Nick's body would be found 4 days later.
California has the largest population in the United States and the site of some of the most famous true crime cases in history. But there's more than meets the eye to the crime in California. Join Sean, Jessica, and Charles on the California True Crime Podcast as they cover crime both infamous and overlooked from around our state while looking at the deeper history that goes beyond beaches and movie stars.
Upon hearing the news of Nick's body being discovered, the 17-year-old girl that he had earlier befriended in Santa Barbara immediately notified the police. Leads began piling up, and on August 16, 2000, 4 suspects, minus Jesse Hollywood, were arrested. Graham Presley, 17, was convicted of second-degree murder as a minor and was sent to a California Youth Authority facility. He was released in 2007, shortly before his 25th birthday. William Skidmore, 20, was charged with kidnapping and robbery and was sentenced to 9 years in prison. He was released in April 2009. Jesse Ruge, 20, was convicted on charges of aggravated kidnapping and was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 5 to 7 years. In October 2013, after serving 11 years of his sentence, he was released. Ryan Hoyt, 20, was found guilty of first-degree murder and was sentenced to death. Jesse James Hollywood was nowhere to be found. It was later found out that Hollywood had withdrew $25,000 from his bank account, bought a Lincoln Town car, and drove to Las Vegas with his girlfriend, where they stayed at the Bellagio on August 15th. The following day, the couple drove to Woodland Park, Colorado, where his godfather, 48-year-old Richard Dispenza, lived. Jesse's girlfriend flew back to California while he stayed the night at Dispenza's. The next morning, Dispenza drove Jesse to a Ramada Inn in Colorado Springs, where he stays for 3 days. After checking out of the Ramada Inn, Jesse Hollywood isn't seen until 4.5 years later. 2 years after the murder of Nicholas Margowitz, police received a tip that Jesse Hollywood had made his way to Brazil, where he was living under the name Michael Costa Grill. He resided on the eastern coast on a town called Saquarema. His neighbors knew him as Mike, and he lifted weights on his porch and could often be seen running along the beach with his 2 pit bulls. At night, he'd often go bar hopping, where he'd gotten this reputation as the guy who talked too much when he was drunk. Hollywood had begun seeing a woman by the name of Marcia, who lived with him in Saquarema. In an interview with Dateline, she said that one day in March 2005, the man she knew as Mike had gotten a phone call from a female cousin who told him that she would be visiting Brazil soon, and the two made plans to meet up. Jesse Hollywood and Marcia would go to a local cafe to meet with the cousin, but instead, he was met by federal agent Kelly Bernardo, who immediately arrested him. Jesse was brought to the police headquarters in Rio de Janeiro, where for hours, he maintained that his name was Michael Garreau and that this was all a misunderstanding. But he'd later confessed to authorities that his name was indeed Jesse James Hollywood. It was later discovered that one of his main sources of income while he was hiding out in Brazil was monthly payments of $1,200 that he received from none other than his father, Jack Hollywood. On March 10, 2005, Jesse Hollywood was extradited back to the U.S. and was taken straight to the Santa Barbara County Jail. The next day, he appeared in court where he pled not guilty to all charges. His trial would begin on May 15th. On July 8th, 2009, Jesse would be found guilty of first-degree murder and kidnapping for ordering the murder of Nicholas Margowitz. A week later, on July 15th, he'd be sentenced to life in prison for his crimes. And that is a very sad story of the murder of Nicholas Markiewicz. This case, man, so fucking tragic. And for what? $1,200 all because some dipshit needed to feed his ego? Well, fuck that guy. And rest in power, Nicholas Markowitz. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a solid and rate 5 stars and leave a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Support the podcast by donating to our coffee or by buying yourself something nice from our merch store. Links to both of those will be in the show notes. And, oh, I almost forgot. Y'all, we have a website. That's right, freakyafpodcast.com. Go check it out. All things freaky as fuck can be found there, and you know, it's a pretty big deal. You can find us on socials at freakyafpod on Twitter and Instagram. Go give us a follow. And be sure to come back here next week for some more spooky shit. Bye!
I'm Edward October, creator host of Octoberpod, and I'm proud to be partnered with the Darkcast Network. For dark-sided podcasts of impeccable taste, choose one of the many fine podcasts of the Darkcast Network. The Darkcast Network. I recommend it.